Today on Doomed! Have you noticed a group of people wearing Hawaiian shirts at your local Black Lives Matter protests? Yeah, the gun-toting ones, not the guys, you know, maybe there's some guys chilling at your local Black Lives Matter protest in Hawaiian shirts. But they're not wearing guns. Or body armor. We're talking the gun-toting ones. Yeah, then you ran into the Boogaloo Boys. They're a brand new movement on the far right, and we're going to talk about them on today's episode of Doomed. Who are they? Where did they come from? Why the hell are they wearing those Hawaiian shirts? We're going to find out right now with my guest. Let's pull up the feed now. Cassie Miller, Senior Research Analyst at the Southern Poverty Law Center. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I came across your article for Hate Watch, breaking down the Boogaloo Boys, and you know I wanted to have you on because obviously I'm a big fan of Hate Watch. I have Michael Hayden on the show often, and it's nice actually to have someone who isn't Michael Hayden on the show from Hate Watch. So thank you again for joining us, and you know I wanted to get into this because I feel like we hear so much about, thanks to, you know, the President of the United States and other loud voices, talking about Antifa and how the Antifa protesters, or as they like to call them, Antifa terrorists, are, you know, going to these protests, these Black Lives Matter protests all over the country, these local protests, some in big cities, some in, you know, the suburbs. It's been amazing to see this spread. But you hear all this stuff about Antifa coming to cause violence, to, you know, these outside agitators, these, you know, anti-fascist outside agitators. Amazing to put those words together. Can't have the anti-fascists come to town, right? But anyway, you hear all about Antifa, but barely really anything about the Boogaloo Boys. Can you tell us who the Boogaloo Boys are?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Boogaloo Boys are also trying to figure out who they are a little bit at this point. You know, for the most part, it is an online subculture. It's mostly based in Facebook, and they're united by a few things. And I guess those are that they're pretty right-leaning, that they love guns, and that they believe that they're going to be part of an armed insurrection against the government. So the Boogaloo itself refers to this armed insurrection or sometimes a civil war, or in more extreme circles, it can mean an actual race war. So what we're seeing now is that these guys who have mostly hung around on Facebook and talked about, you know, what weapons they own, their tactical gear, how to build weaponry, attacking cops who they have really special animus for. Now we're seeing them kind of come into like IRL organizing, and they're on the ground at a bunch of these rallies. And some of them are claiming to have some solidarity with the protesters who are out there after the murder of George Floyd. That's questionable how much of that, you know, solidarity is really sincere. So it's kind of a confusing movement because some of them claim to have solidarity with Black Lives Matter, and then some are pretty overtly racist. They really want
to
portray themselves.
Hard to have that solidarity when you're overtly racist.
Right. And, I mean, what they want to do is portray themselves as a liberty movement, I think, most broadly. And I think the question is, you know, like, liberty for whom? Because there is a lot of racist content on their pages, and they don't seem to have, you know, an actual lot of solidarity when you look at what they're doing on the ground.
Right. So, you know, I wanted to give that sort of background up front so people can even know why we're bringing up the Boogaloo Boys right now at this moment in history. But now that we got that down, just, you know, their presence at Black Lives Matter, and before we get too deep into that, let's rewind and let's go back to what this movement, you know, even started as. Where did it begin? What is the founding of this Boogaloo movement?
Well, it goes back to like early 2010s internet culture. And the term boogaloo emerged kind of concurrently in two far-right spaces. So both in the anti-government movement and in the white power movement. And in the anti-government movement, this is something that's really kind of defined by conspiracy theories. The main animating one is that the government is intent on disarming the citizenry, maybe putting people in FEMA camps, and that they're going to eventually, create a totalitarian one-world government. So these are people who are really worried about things like gun confiscation. And in those contexts, the Boogaloo emerged in a 4chan board called K, which is really a weapons board. And it's not necessarily overtly white nationalist. In fact, they try to kind of not talk about politics very much. But when you're on 4chan, it's not, it's hard to not overlap with Pol, which is, an extremely racist kind of free-for-all. And what we're seeing is that kind of bleeds over into the culture of K. And so that's the first place we see it. And there kind of refers specifically to a civil war. And it's kind of it's related to the anti-government's movement's kind of worry about the moment, when shit hits the fan. That's something that they talk about a lot. So, right, when society collapses, we need to be prepared. And so for them, that's what the Boogaloo is, that, shit's hitting the fan. We've got to be ready for the civil war coming. But it's also, emerged in these white power spaces online. So places like Pol, and even some as extreme as Iron March, which was a forum that was online from 2011 to 2017. And that was kind of really like the heart of fascism on the internet, and where you get the kind of burgeoning accelerationist movement. And these are the people who believe that in order for, neo-Nazis and white nationalists to ever come to power, they need to bring society to collapse. And then in that sort of power vacuum, they'll eventually come to power. So what they want to do is kind of actively push the state towards collapse. And for them, that's the Boogaloo. And so what we have is that it's in these two contexts, there's kind of always racist undertones. And those things have sort of followed through into how we think about the Boogaloo today.
So why the term Boogaloo though?
It refers to a 1984 movie called Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, which was, I guess, notoriously terrible. I've never seen it. But it got picked up as things do in far-right internet culture and turned into Civil War II, Electric Boogaloo. So that was kind of like how it was first framed.
All right. I mean, when meme culture is all you pretty much know, I mean that guides your every single move, then I guess, the best way to explain a second Civil War would be to find a movie sequel that uses the number two in it. I mean, right? I mean, that seems to be the gist.
There's some sort of internal logic. I don't know.
So it seems like the movement's pretty it's not very organized. It's sort of anyone who wants to consider themselves to be a boogaloo boy can just claim to be a boogaloo boy, like a lot of decentralized movements. Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, there isn't a formalized group. I think they, even to call them a movement, I think is to give them a little too much credit. I think it's a little more incoherent than that. And they're trying to kind of figure out their own boundaries. So, the one thing that unites them is this idea that there's going to be a civil war and that they are the ones who are going to be prepared for it and that they're going to be the ones to put things in order and take control. And then the other stuff that unites them are, it's an aesthetic in some ways. It's like a
Right.
brand.
Right.
So they have Boogaloo insignias. They have their Hawaiian shirts, which they wear because they've taken Boogaloo and turned it into Big Luau. So you have to wear a Hawaiian shirt. They also
Naturally.
sometimes,
Naturally. I
right.
mean, that makes tons of sense.
They sometimes call it the Big Igloo. So they also have a flag. That's like an American flag, but instead of the stars, you have a big igloo, and then one of the stripes is a Hawaiian stripe. So these are kind of the things that define them and how you can pick them out in all of these rallies.
So it seems like this is really just, you know, what you have here are, I'm assuming most of them are young, you know, 20s, early 30s, maybe?
It's like, I would, overwhelmingly white men, probably in their 20s and 30s.
Right. So it seems like you have a case here where you have, I'm assuming they also, you know, most of them, I know we mentioned early, and we'll get more into this in a minute, that the solidarity of Black Lives Matter, but I'm assuming the ideology here among the Boogaloo movement is pretty far right.
It seems to be that way.
So you really have what is basically a group of, not even a group, individual young white conservatives who are basically looking for an identity, and this meme just popped up in their, where they congregate in their 4chan and other forums, and some of them just sort of latched onto this as the cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a meme that basically turned into a subculture.
Right, because even like, you know, even the alt-right, you know, had, when even when they were big and they seemingly were in the, you know, the eye of everyone who was paying attention to this sort of stuff, they, you know, had arguments over who really is alt-right. Like, there was really, there was an official alt-right group. I mean, Richard Spencer has, you know, his website is, you know, alt-right.com, and pretty much he seemed to have sort of carried the banner for the official alt-right. And that sort of, you know, created, you know, arguments online and in their little, you know, their little communities about who really was alt-right. But there is nothing like that for Boogaloo.
There's a pretty big lack of coherence. I mean, you know, the ideology that underpins them, though, is far right and racist. And so it's hard to imagine them existing, you know, in any other kind of ideological landscape, really. As much as they might try to claim any kind of solidarity with leftists or with Black Lives Matter protesters, you know, this is very much an idea that has permeated the entirety of the far right, and that's what they grew out of.
Right. So where have they been since? Now, you said this is a movement, you know, at least not really a movement. Like you mentioned, it's barely a movement, but people started identifying as Boogaloo, you know, in the 2010s. Where, and they, you know, now all of a sudden, I feel like in the past month, you've been hearing about them. The media is finally covering them. They're showing up at Black Lives Matter protests. But going back, what have they been making the? Where have they been making their presence known? Where, you know, when did they start coming offline and actually saying, "This is what we're gonna do. We're gonna wear these Hawaiian shirts in public," and you know, what sort of protests or events were they attending, if they even were attending anything before this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first time that, you know, we really started to see them kind of enter the real world was in early 2020. So after they were on places like K, they migrated to Facebook. And Facebook has a long history of allowing extremists to use their platform and to stay on their platform even while violating their own terms of service. So you have a lot of people.
No
moving
way,
on
Facebook
there
doing are, that? No, I can't believe no.
Surprising.
No, but Mark Zuckerberg seems like such a good guy. What's going on here? You got to be kidding me.
spend my days yelling at Facebook.
what's amazing, and not to go completely off the rails here, but this, I saw this today, and I have to bring it up. You know, they finally got around to spending like a 100 or 200, white supremacist profiles and pages. And apparently, while doing that, they also suspended a couple dozen, if not more, and I think it was something like maybe even 100, profiles belonging to non-racist skinheads, people in the Rude Boy Ska movement. They suspended one of the frontmen from the Specials, who is a Black man, because he identifies with Rude Boy culture, with overlaps with skinhead culture. I bet he was in some like Sharp Facebook groups or something like that. Amazing. Even when they do decide to do something, they can't even do it right.
And actually it's funny because I heard that, and I was thinking about how, you know, we've been writing stuff about the Boogaloo Boys, and so many other outlets have, and telling them like, hey, they're violating your terms of service, here's all these examples of them advocating for violence. And we haven't gotten any movement really at all. And one of the things that they told a lot of reporters when they asked, you know, why haven't you done anything about this, is that Boogaloo is actually a kind of music. It's Latin music. And so if we remove Boogaloo groups, like, we might end up removing music groups that we didn't intend to. And that sounds absurd because this is one of the largest social media companies in the world. Like, surely they could figure out the distinction between the two, but apparently they can't because today they screwed that up so badly.
Right.
So who knows?
Right. I mean, it seems like you could pick it up from, you know, someone saying Sieg Heil, you know what I mean? So, but apparently they couldn't. Incredible. All right, yeah. Let's get back to the Boogaloo. So Facebook. I think we were talking Facebook. They were congregating on Facebook, and they were mostly sort of gathering in these sort of groups and pages.
Right.
So where did they start to get offline and actually, you know, make themselves known in real life?
So the first
IRL.
Yeah, the first kind of IRL place that they really kind of announced themselves was at a gun rights rally in Richmond, Virginia on January 20th, 2020. So Richmond has tried to pass a lot of gun safety legislation, and they have successfully passed it since. And this caused a big commotion within the gun rights community and within militias and the anti-government movement more broadly. And so what you got was thousands and thousands of members of the right, of militias, and some Boogaloo boys who went out on the ground that day to protest. And that was the first time we kind of saw actual Boogaloo boy insignia on the ground, you know, so people with tactical gear, with vests, with a Boogaloo patch with Pepe on it. And so part of that was like to make their announcement to protest this gun safety legislation. But also for a lot of them, they were thinking that this could be the thing to like actually set off the Boog. You know, what they want is for the Boogaloo to happen. And they're looking for some sort of societal discord that they can use to set it off. And so for them, this was a place where that might happen.
You know, you can tell they're noobs to political activism when they think a single event is about to be the jump off. Cause I could tell you from, my experience as a leftist, you know, you're going to need to be doing this for a long time, buddies. If you're going to, it takes a lot to move the needle, even a smidge. So to think that this one event was going to be the jump off, I mean, noob move there, guys.
Yeah, they're very slowly learning. It's been interesting to watch their Facebook pages and watch them try to organize themselves. And clearly none of them have any background in organizing. And so it's a lot of people asking like, hey, I'm in Virginia. Is anyone in my area? And then everyone else just calls them a Fed and it goes nowhere. So, right.
Well, they do have that in common with the left, to be honest with you.
That's true.
Now, who are some of the, because you bring up the gun rights, obviously gun rights appears to be the base of what this whole movement is constructed on. And I keep saying movement, you know what I mean. What little of a movement there is, you know, it seems to be the base of what the Boogaloo boys are. And I was reading your piece, and a name came up that is very familiar with me, because I remember when this went down, just, you know, thinking how ridiculous this is, period. And then the fact that you would die over this. And who I'm talking about is, I believe his name, Lavoy Finicum.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the militia guys who was with the Bundy boys. You know, the family that pulled their guns on the feds for not paying their rancher fees, their land right fees, when they occupied, what was it that they occupied again? Like a
nature reserve.
Right. They occupied a nature reserve, which, again, the idea that that's the hill you're going to literally die on is fantastic to me. Incredible. So, you know, they occupied this nature reserve. They finally come out. Lavoie Finicum is one who didn't put down his guns, I remember. He wanted to fight for this nature reserve. And he ended up getting killed by the feds.
Yeah. He hit a roadblock and reached for his gun, and so he was killed. And he's since become this really big martyr figure within the anti-government movement. And the Boogaloo Boys have kind of adopted him as their own. They have a whole kind of list of martyrs. They're engaging in, you know, some kind of myth-making here, that there's been this long-running battle between these patriots and law enforcement. And so they have on their flag, they have one that lists all the people they consider kind of their martyrs. And Lavoie Finicum is on there. Vicky Weaver is on there, who was killed in an FBI shootout in Ruby Ridge in 1992, which is another kind of major moment within the anti-government movement. And then they have more recent people that they put on there, like a man named Duncan Lemp, who was killed in March. He was 21. He was in Maryland, and he was killed during a no-knock raid. So the cops thought that he might have some illegal firearms. And so it's unclear exactly what happened. The cops said that he had his room booby-trapped. His parents say he was actually just killed in his bed. But this became a huge, huge thing within the Boogaloo movement. And he became kind of their, like, defining martyr. And he probably more than anyone else has probably kind of helped to define what the Boogaloo movement is. And so after that, you got a lot of groups on Facebook and stuff called, like, We Are Duncan Lemp, or if reporters would ask the Boogaloo Boys what their names were, they would say Duncan Lemp. So it gave them a person to orient themselves towards and to kind of seek revenge for, you know, his unjustified death.
Right. And was he was someone who identified with Boogaloo, right?
He did.
Right. So you have someone who, you know, I mean, that's the you can't get any more, you know, perfect for them to hold someone more perfect to hold up as a martyr than that. They I mean, this is such a young thing that they've got going on here. And right away they have someone who identifies with them getting killed. I mean, it seems like that's a pretty strong jump off for them.
Yeah, yeah. And it really, I mean, I think it helps solidify things at a really crucial time, because he was killed right around the time that the coronavirus was hitting. And so what we saw is they're becoming galvanized around this one thing. And then we have this huge global disruption that is upending literally everything in everyone's lives. And to them, that looks like another thing that might be able to set off the boogaloo, that there might be, you know, all this societal unrest, because there's just so much uncertainty. And so they really, really start to kind of organize around that. The Tech Transparency Project did a really good report where they looked at these Boogaloo groups on Facebook, and they put it out at the end of April, and they found that there were over 125 of these groups, and that 60% of them had been formed in the last 3 months. So during the time that Duncan Lemp was killed, and then when the coronavirus was hitting and things were starting to get locked down. So these are really kind of the big galvanizing events for the movement or subculture.
Right. Now, I did an episode on specifically how, you know, white supremacists were using the coronavirus to basically, you know, build a brand off of. There's actually one white supremacist who has built a very successful coronavirus podcast, where, you know, a daily podcast where he was updating people on coronavirus happenings and news, not, you know, being upfront that, you know, what he was, a white supremacist. But obviously, you know, if you're doing a show like that, you're obviously using that to spread your ideology without being upfront about doing it. Were the Boogaloo Boys, well, you just said they were, how were the Boogaloo Boys using the coronavirus? Did they go down to some of these lockdown protests when the conservatives and militia groups started to, you know, rally and cry that they need to open up because their hair was getting a bit too long?
Yes, the Boogaloo Boys were there with the ladies who wanted to get their hair cut. They were out there with their insignias. We saw a lot of them handing out flyers. I think for them, it was this moment of uncertainty, and they realized also that there was probably a receptive audience on the ground who would be pretty sympathetic to what they had to say and would probably agree with a lot of their anti-government ideas. And I think, being out on the ground lent them a few things like media attention. I mean, obviously, we know really this was a really small movement of people. I think only like 10% of people actually were in favor of opening things up in order to, help the economy. But there was just a huge amount of media attention on these rallies. And so that was a way of kind of projecting themselves into a larger space. But also, that being on the ground and just meeting other people creates a huge sense of camaraderie, and it's a way for people to connect and recruit people. And we've seen this over and over again in the far right, that on the ground organizing plays a big role for them, because it actually helps to create networks that are localized, because so much of their organizing is really online. That's useful to some extent, but the on the ground stuff is to them too.
Now, I'm not sure if you could answer this because I don't know if the any analyzing of this has been done, but is there an overlap between people who are identifying as Boogaloo now and people who identified as part of other right-wing subcultures? Now, obviously, most of these people are right-wing, but I'm talking about specific subcultures. Like, are there people who consider themselves to be alt-right that are now Boogaloo, 3%ers that now consider themselves Boogaloo, Proud Boys who now consider them Boogaloo? Do we know if there is an overlap there, or if these are just the latest the latest brainwashed young white men who get fall down the YouTube rabbit hole?
I mean, I think, it's hard to tell at this point. I think that a lot of them are coming from, racist far-right subcultures. So, there's some Boogaloo groups on Facebook that make reference to Rhodesia in their group name. And, Rhodesia holds a special place in the heart of white supremacists.
Right. I mean, if you're right, if you're new to this, if you're just some, lonely white kid stuck home with no friends during the pandemic, you're not referencing Rhodesia until you get deep into it.
Yeah, I mean, Dylann Roof, we know, who killed nine parishioners in a church in Charleston, talked about Rhodesia. So, that was an important marker for him. So this is it's a really important point within the white nationalist movement. So probably you're not going to be throwing that around unless you have some familiarity with that subculture.
Right. So let's talk about the Black Lives Matter protests and the Boogaloo presence there. Now, one interesting thing that I think I want to start off talking about is you make mention actually that within the Boogaloo movement, there was at least online in at least one random Facebook group that identifies with the movement. There were people sharing memes, basically praising John Brown. Now that's that's interesting. That's certainly something that you don't usually see in a far right movement.
Yeah, I mean, they're idolizing someone who I guess engaged in armed insurrection. And there is some praise of Black Lives Matter. They do talk about some of the Black people who have been killed over the years, and express frustration and anger over that. But that's sort of minor, I think, in comparison to a lot of the other content, which is more focused on kind of building that armed insurrection. So, talking about murdering ATF agents or killing cops, or, just before we got on here, I was just looking at some Boogaloo groups, and there was a meme about making napalm. So, in some ways, you know, there's so much going on where there's like people who want to be anti-racist, there's extremely racist content, there's extremely violent content, and it's all mixing in there.
Right. And I bring that up because it actually, when I saw that, it reminded me specifically of something I experienced and something I encountered in the mid-2010s with the men's rights movement. I was debating Paul Elam of A Voice for Men. I brought up how, you know, if you're a men's rights activist and you care about men so much, then why doesn't the men's rights movement care about police brutality against black men? Why don't they care about what happens to black men in this country? And he, along with a lot of people who were watching in the chat, you know, wanted to point out that that was a racial issue, not a men's rights issue. And I, you know, that stuck with me whenever I see something like this, because, you know, here they are talking about John Brown. Now, John Brown was a white guy, but what he did was, you know, he killed people to help free slaves. And, you know, I feel like it reminded me of that in terms of they look at John Brown and they don't even see that, you know, what he was doing was to free black people from the chains of slavery. They look at him as just, oh, cool, a guy killing, cops.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the right interpretation. And I think there is an inability to think about how black people and black men in particular have been targeted by the police in this country. I mean, it's obviously something we know that's been documented over and over again, often captured on camera for us now, but they just don't identify in the same way. So, right. You know, Duncan Lemp was killed when there was a no-knock raid, but so was Breonna Taylor.
Right.
And, you know, Duncan Lemp has galvanized them, and Breonna Taylor doesn't get nearly as much mention from them.
Well, Breonna Taylor wasn't wearing one of those Pepe and the Hawaiian shirt patches. So
that is true.
I mean, it is, you know, I mean, that really seems to be, you know, what I mean, I get it. I get why you have a young white guy who literally was part of their little group who got killed. But still, if they want, you know, if they actually cared about what they pretend to, Breonna Taylor would mean just as much, probably, I mean, obviously to us more, because of what it means to you know, what happened to her. It's a very different experience. Mm-hmm. Now let's in your article, you brought up something that happened in Minneapolis in 2015. Can you explain what, you know, and this was at another Black Lives Matter event. Can you explain what happened here?
Yeah, so, you know, we talked about Kay a little bit, the 4chan board, which was the weapons board. And that was actually a place where several men in Minnesota, four men in Minnesota, ended up meeting and then ended up having a real-life meetup not so long after that. And that was in 2015, and that was at the same time that a man named Jamar Clark was killed by the police in Minneapolis. And so there was, you know, a number of protests in Minneapolis, and these men came and kind of stalked around and harassed people, and one of them ended up shooting several of the protesters. He shot five people. And so, you know, in this place, this message board, which is the same place where the Boogaloo meme was kind of birthed, you also have several people who end up engaging in real life violence against Black Lives Matter protesters. And so I think it's pretty telling, you know, and sort of prescient in some ways about where the sympathies of, you know, this movement lie.
Right. Right. I mean, you could, and I bring that up because obviously this all begins, the current state of things all begins in Minneapolis with, you know, the police killing of George Floyd. And mm-hmm. I mean, there's a video going around I don't recall if this was in Minneapolis, but there is a video going around that's sort of going viral online where it's being framed as, you know, like, oh, look, because it's a video of a guy in the Hawaiian shirt with the bulletproof vest over him carrying a firearm, and he's picking up one of the either rubber bullets or tear gas canisters that the police shot. And he's holding it up and he's saying, you know, like, do you believe that this is what they're shooting at these peaceful protesters?
And oh,
right. And it's being shared. It's, mm-hmm. Oh, look, even these gun-toting right-wingers are opening their eyes to this. And, you know, it's clear to me, if to anyone at least who is familiar with how these movements work, is that, I mean, maybe we found the one guy who all of a sudden had the eye-opening experience. That's a possibility. Anything's possible. But more likely is you have someone who is using this to further his own agenda.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there are some people who I think actually are they're frustrated about police brutality, right? I mean, the militarization of the police and over-policing is really what's at play here. And not only has that contributed to the Black Lives Matter protests on the ground right now, but, you know, it is something that has contributed to the growth of the Boogaloo Boys. I mean, it's something that they're paying attention to. And, you know, if it weren't for the militarization of the police, you know, what happened to Duncan Lemp might not have happened that way, because we wouldn't have been doing, you know, sending out a SWAT team to do a no-knock raid. So that is very much, I think, a part of this narrative. But I mean, for the most part, you know, what we're seeing is that most of these Boogaloo Boys are basically trying to kind of leverage the protests to kind of put forth, you know, their own kind of right-wing vision or use it to their own ends.
Right. Now, in Vegas, there were three people who identified with the Boogaloo movement who were arrested. I believe it was federal charges, and I believe it was a conspiracy for destruction or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they were caught with Molotovs, and I feel like, you know, here you have something connected to this far right movement that we actually now see was part of the protests. And I wanna be clear here, because I hated the whole perception that a lot of political leaders, a lot of elected officials are putting forward, that anyone who, or even just anyone, the majority of people engaging in violence at protests were outside agitators or part of a far left or far right movement. I mean, we know now, I knew when I heard it, but if you needed to be, if you were someone who needed to wait for the stats, we know now that that's empirically false. The arrest records of number of cities have come out, and by and large, in each case, something like, you know, 85 to 90% of people who were arrested at these events were local protesters. So the idea that these protests are being led by anyone on, you know, by Antifa super soldiers or Boogaloo Boys is bullshit. But we do know there is an element of Boogaloo there. And, you know, that's why I think it's important to bring this up and talk about Boogaloo right now. Because, you know, while they may not be a force to reckon with during these protests, we can see that they're finding the openings. Now back to these Las Vegas guys. So they're arrested on federal charges, and I feel like it's sort of been, you know, it was covered, but you don't really see anyone, you know, when the president is going on about Antifa and far-left anarchists, and you don't hear, I mean, obviously, it's not surprising with Trump, but, you know, it's sort of like, you know, hello?
Yeah, I mean, Antifa has become this insane boogeyman, obviously, and that's been a right-wing project for a long time now to, you know, paint the left as the ones who are inherently violent, when we know very well that the far right has a monopoly on political violence in this country. But, you know, and we know that there aren't outside agitators, that is a trope that is always kind of used at these moments to really delegitimize what is real frustration and real political protest. You know, by saying that it's all due to outside agitators, you distract from the real issues that are leading people to get there on the ground. And so I don't think it's right to talk about the Boogaloo Boys as, you know, infiltrators, or that they're trying to direct, you know, or the movement in any way. What I think they're doing is they're basically trying to leverage it and use it kind of as a stage to carry out their own project. So they don't necessarily see themselves as a part of the protest. They're just trying to use the protest to create more civil unrest. You know, a lot of them, those guys in Vegas in particular, expressed disappointment that the riots weren't violent enough. So the three guys in Vegas had several plans in place. They talked about destroying a substation, a power station, a ranger station. But then they also talked about bringing Molotov cocktails to a Black Lives Matter protest. And they got arrested when they had the materials to make those. So they are, I think they're facing some state terrorism charges. So, you know, what they were trying to do is use this as their stage to carry out, you know, this right-wing vision that they have.
Right. Now, what is next for the Boogaloo Boys? What are they currently, I mean, obviously these protests are not going away, so I'm sure their presence will remain. But, you know, where are they congregating right now, being that so many of their Facebook groups are being finally, you know, with the spotlight being put on them, they are being, yeah, at least some of them are being suspended and taken down. Do they have, like, you know, the, you know, how after, you know, white supremacists, you know, lost, you know, after the alt-right lost 4chan, they moved somewhere else. After, you know, some of these, you know, they moved to 8chan. You know, where are the mm-hmm. Boogaloo Boys currently sort of staging their growth efforts?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, they're really still on Facebook. There's, yeah, like, I go check Facebook every day, and those, like, all the groups that I know of, they're still up. So I think that they're probably there to stay for a while, and they do, you know, things they can to avoid bans, you know. So, like, they just remove Boogaloo from their name, and then the algorithm won't catch them, and they'll get to stay on there. And because a lot of these are private groups, Facebook is way more hesitant to actually go and delete them. But, you know, we see people migrate to other platforms all the time. So I assume and I hope that eventually Facebook would take these pages down. And then, you know, what will likely happen is that you disrupt the network, at least. And you have to give, you know, then they have to kind of reorganize, but they might migrate to another platform. And, you know, one where we see a lot of people moving to is Telegram lately. And that's kind of where we're seeing kind of the most overt calls for violence these days.
Right. I mean, Telegram is, I mean, when Milo got deplatformed everywhere, Milo Yiannopoulos, he moved to Telegram, Laura Loomer moved to Telegram. I mean, and those are the big mm-hmm. names in the movement, you know, the far right. So, you know, it's not surprising that these guys would go there. So are they talking beyond the Black Lives Matter protests yet? What are they looking at?
I don't know that they're talking beyond it yet, because I think they're kind of stuck trying to figure out what their role is. And, you know, for all the people saying, like, hey, this is our moment to join this uprising, most people seem to be incredibly suspicious of the protesters and really, really uncomfortable with the idea of aligning with people who might be on the left, even if they, you know, might both, you know, find police brutality abhorrent. And so what we're seeing is that they're criticizing the protests and kind of painting them as illegitimate. And we're also seeing, you know, a lot of racial commentary and racist commentary being made about the protesters. You know, a lot of people calling the protesters joggers, which is now kind of basically a racist slur within a lot of these communities.
Yeah.
Which they're using.
Not, yeah, you could, yeah. The word formation is all there. I mean, they're just a few letters off.
Yes, well, yeah, because Ahmaud Arbery was killed while he was jogging, so now that's become their term of choice.
Didn't even think of that, but, you know.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, so that's where it comes from. But, yeah, I mean, there's this suspicion, and what they're doing is kind of aligning actually with business owners. I mean, the thing they seem most concerned about is private property. And so a lot of them, when they're on the ground, they're actually not joining in the protest. They're there to protect private property. And every video I've seen of what they actually look like when they're at these protests is they're not really joining in. I've never seen a Boogaloo boy, engage in any chants. They're always kind of standing off to the side, and they look like they're patrolling. And so that's kind of what they're doing now. And my concern is that they're going to try and kind of align themselves against Antifa, this boogeyman, because a lot of their talk is about, the communists and Antifa who are out on the ground. And we know that kind of rhetoric is everywhere. So I'm, curious and concerned to see where that goes.
I love the idea of this rebellious group of young white men looking to start a civil war, and what they're most concerned about is private property. Can't think of anything more lame, less rebellious, less revolutionary than private property. I mean, they're gonna start marching for landlord rights next or something like that. I mean, unbelievable. Well, not surprising, because really that's what the conservative movement, one of the tent poles of conservative movement is all about. Private property. Cassie, after you broke this down, I have to say, I mean, I knew it before, but I can 110% say it now. The Boogaloo movement is lame as hell. A bunch of nerds and losers and dorks who
You're not going to
feel.
put on a Hawaiian shirt now?
No, I mean, I wouldn't put on a Hawaiian shirt before all this. It sort of goes against my all black, all the time Antifa vibe. But that's my aesthetic. But yeah, no Pepe in an igloo patch for me. Cassie Miller, senior research analyst for the Southern Poverty Law Center. Where can people find you and follow you? And if you want to read Cassie's article, it's in the description of the show on the YouTube live stream and on the public Patreon page. Where else can they find your work, Cassie?
They can find me on the Hate Watch blog, or they can find me on Twitter at Cassie P. Miller.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Hope to have you on again soon in the near future.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Take care.
Well, you too. Bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Some notes before we go into the second half of the show. So this past week and a half, I was on two different podcasts. I was on Jordan Ewells and Rob, oh my God, is it Rousseau? Sorry, Rob, if I fucked up your last name. Their podcast, The Insurgents. And we talked about the protests and the police reaction to the protests and the outside agitator trope. You could check that out. I've tweeted it out. You could go to my Twitter page, at Matt Binder. I was also on the latest episode of Jared Holt's Shitpost podcast. And on that podcast, we also talked about the protests, but we focused more on the misinformation and conspiracy theories going on around that, with a big section on talking the Antifa, the busloads of Antifa going to small town USA. So check out both those podcasts. Jared has given me the thumbs up to post it to my own feed, so I'll be doing that. A couple days after this podcast goes up, just so you know, just to give it a little time, because it is Jared's show. I want him to get the views first, because I'm nice like that. if you were following me on Twitter at Matt Binder, you'll also be familiar with the fact that I was recently demonetized once again on YouTube for the same bullshit reason I was before. For their policy of reused content. Now, that policy is if you're just taking other people's work and posting it as your own and not creating original content, then we do not want to monetize you. That's YouTube's policy. Well, as you guys know, on my YouTube page, youtube.com/MattBinder, it's literally all original content. It's live streams of me on camera, just like you're watching now if you're watching on the YouTube live stream, and a guest talking about the topic of the episode. Took a few days, but YouTube realized that they were once again wrong for doing so, and I've been remonetized. So you can once again, if you're watching on the live stream, drop a super chat, give me a one-off donation. And, you know, there'll be ads and I'll get my pocket change from there too. But, you know, the live stream, when it comes to YouTube monetization, the live stream super chat is where I get the bulk of the money from. And when I say bulk, I mean, you know, a cup of coffee or something like that, which I don't actually spend for a cup of coffee because I don't drink coffee. I save it up to get new equipment and upgrade that stuff, which, by the way, I'll have some new equipment in the works very soon, including a new webcam is on the way with a higher quality and probably some other cool new stuff. Thanks to all you folks who support the show. And if you want to support the show via a monthly subscription, you could do so at patreon.com/MattBinder. I ask for $5 a month. You could give less, you give more. What you get from that is A, supporting the show so I can continue doing it and growing the show. The show doesn't exist, the free show included, without the Patreon subscribers. But you also will get the audio version of the second half of the show, which we're about to go into in a minute. You could also follow me on Twitter at MattBinder. Ooh, I recently started promoting my Instagram a bit. Again, on Instagram, I am at MattBinder. Because I'm going to start posting more there because I realize that a lot of these young protesters are using Instagram to organize and spread their word and get people to protest. And I am now on there finally posting. So again, Twitter, at MattBinder, Instagram, at MattBinder, any other social media platform, search MattBinder and you'll find me. And before we go to the second half of the show, I want to thank my patron subscribers by name. Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Amanda H, Andrew C, Andrew H, Angela, R.E.R., Baka, Ben, Benji, Bobby M, Brian S, Brosnan, Champagne Kami, Chris F, Christine H, Cindy G, Colin R, Connor R, Cracker Barrel, C.T., Cyber Snowstorm, User D, Dan K, Dank Uger, Dave K, David Z, Daya, Douglas V, Dragon Slayer, Eugene B, Froz K, Free Hat, FTW All Day, Graham C, Grey Wind, Greg D, there's two Greg D's, Greg D, and Greg D with two G's, Grim L, Helmy, Hitesh, Igor, Jack D, Jacob W, Jameson, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeremy M, JLS, John B, John S, Jonathan B, Joseph H, Joseph R, Joyce M, Justin S, Katie S, Kaushal, Kyle, Lisa D, Mariah, Mark S, Maddie, Max W, me, Melissa M, Mitch, Michael B, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, NS, Nicole A, Namde Net, Null Style, Odeth, Paul M, Penelope D, Kuster, Rad Dad, Remy, Ryan, Scott R, Seth K, Sean H, Sheena A, Silicone Baby, Stephen R, Stephen S, Steve Austin, well, Stone Cold, I guess, Tamney G, Hypervisor, This Is Not Pizza, Tina M, Tom M, Why That Thai Guy, Wutopian, Zach M, and Zoe. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We are going to the second half of the show now. Everybody else, see you all next time on Doomed!